Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Block Talk Radio's Adoption Focus. This is Connie Going. I am so excited to be able to have with us today Jean Hoffman. And Jean Hoffman is a safe delivery program consultant in Michigan. And this show is sponsored by Adoption Associates. And Adoption Associates is an adoption agency that has been established since 1990. They have done well over 5,000 adoptions in that time. They are located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and northeastern Michigan. They specialize in domestic and international, and they are very passionate about this topic for the safe delivery program. So let me just go ahead and get started. Jean, are you there?
I am.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so excited to have you here and to learn all about this wonderful program. Tell us a little bit about the history and how you got involved with it.
Well, the Safe Delivery of Newborns Law was enacted in 2000, and at that time I was the adoption program director for the Family Independence Agency. So I had the lead responsibility of implementing the safe delivery law, which meant I had some input in how the language was drafted in the original law, and worked with a number of community agencies to get that implementation going. And the law was effective January 1st, 2001. And the Michigan legislators really drafted this law because in 2000, early 2000, we had just an extraordinary number of infant abandonments. Some of those infants survived and others did not. So they were quite alarmed by the numbers and wanted to respond to that and offer a way for parents who were faced with an unplanned pregnancy another option to consider. And so the safe delivery law does allow an individual with an unplanned pregnancy to safely, legally, and anonymously surrender an infant no more than 72 hours old to an emergency service provider. And in our law, the emergency service provider is defined as an employee or contractor of a hospital, a fire department, or police station, and that individual employee has to be inside the building and on duty. And effective January 1st, 2007, we expanded that definition to include a paramedic or EMT who would respond to a 911 call from a parent.
Okay. So, and help me understand, if I'm a woman that is I'm pregnant, but it's unplanned, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, and I go into labor, and I, instead of, you know, a lot of the stories that we read in the paper where a child is left abandoned on a doorstep or in a trash can or, you know, and such scary, scary things, is they can literally go to one of these places or call 911 to have a paramedic come out, and they can do it. And how does the anonymous part work?
Well, the parent can choose to not share any identifying information. However, we do ask that our emergency service providers who are in the position of accepting temporary protective custody of an infant, they are instructed to at least ask the parent if they're willing to share some basic medical background, if not even their name, with assurances that any information that they do provide will be kept confidential. So if a parent wants to surrender their infant, we're encouraging parents to consider going to a hospital and actually delivering and surrendering. And we
right.
do that because, yeah, we named this law Safe Delivery of Newborns because we were concerned not only about the infant's health, but about the mom's health as well. So we wanted to encourage any individual who found themselves in this, you know, maybe panic, a state of denial or desperation about this pregnancy, to be able to also get appropriate medical care for themselves.
Right.
So what we found over the last several years is that women are willing to go into the hospital and deliver and surrender. And more often than not, are at least providing some basic background information and or their name. But we do treat that confidentially. Mm-hmm. So that's not released in any public documents whatsoever.
So, I mean, in adoption, we know how important it is to get medical information. So adding that in has, I'm sure, enabled adoptive families to really go into adopting a child with, you know, who they don't have a lot on, but they would have the medical history. That's so important.
Absolutely. We don't always have a lot of information, but we at least have some. And it's important to the infant, too, in later years, to, if they have questions about their biological family, that we have some, you know, at least some information that we can share with them down the road. Mm-hmm. And we do tell the surrendering parent that they can provide, we have a central adoption registry, which is a place where individuals who are adoptees or who have surrendered or adopted their child, they can go to the central adoption registry and share updated information and or also obtain information about their birth families.
Okay.
So that's available to them. Again, with a surrender, we don't have a lot of information, but should the parent later, surrendering parent later down the road, decide that, you know, they're willing to share more information, that can be recorded with the Central Adoption Registry.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And the registry is really important to know if because when a child turns 18 and becoming a legal adult, they can then register and it will connect the two parties.
Correct.
Is that how that works? Yes.
Right.
So what would the difference be for a mom who's coming in, she's delivering her child, and as she's delivering, she's like, I'm not keeping this child. I want to place this child for adoption. And the difference between utilizing the safe delivery program or having the social worker at the hospital hand her a list of adoption agencies?
When a mom makes the statement that she wants to pursue adoption, really safe delivery shouldn't even be discussed at that point, because we want to encourage moms to go through a traditional adoption for all the reasons that we've just been talking about. You get the medical
right.
background. You can make some choices about whether it's an open or closed adoption, the level of involvement of the families, which is so much better for both sides.
Right.
It's only when we see a parent who is coming in and saying, I don't want this child, I'm not taking it. They're obviously in some kind of distress about giving birth and about being a parent. We've encouraged our hospital social workers and the nursing staff that might be working with these parents to, you know, pursue the traditional adoption. But if they see that panic and distress, and then bring up that they do have this option of safe delivery and surrendering anonymously.
That's wonderful. Have they found that birth mothers have come in and delivered and then left the hospital and left the child there without really even communicating what they were doing?
In the early years, we had a few of the surrendering parents come in. One I can think of, you know, gave a fictitious name and left the hospital right away, so there really wasn't. But in the last, really, I'd say, you know, 8 years, the parents who are surrendering are making a conscious decision and are working with the social work staff and or the adoption agency staff that come in to make the best decision for them.
Okay.
They're not necessarily staying a long time at the hospital, but they are at least staying long enough to talk to a professional about their options.
That's great. And tell me a little bit about, then does the so the child is born, how is an agency, and the child's born and the mom says, I want to enact the safe delivery program, how is an adoption agency then either selected or contacted, or is it, how does that work?
We did a survey early on and identified Michigan's child placing agencies in the private sector who were willing to accept and place a surrendered newborn.
Okay.
And so not all of Michigan's adoption agencies will place a surrendered newborn.
Wow.
But for those that chose to do that, we have a directory that is available to the hospitals that lists the agencies by county, but also many of those agencies will serve the whole state.
Right.
So we have them listed as statewide agencies, plus then they would all be listed under their counties or the counties that they serve. In hospitals, we developed early on what we call the Response and Resource Handbook for Emergency Service Providers, and that handbook provides all the background information, checklists, flowcharts, the forms that we use to obtain voluntary medical background, a voluntary release form, transfer forms once the adoption agency is identified. And so that is where the hospital directory, the agency directory is located. So the hospitals will, you know, they're usually familiar with agencies that they work with in their communities, and if they're not, they'll use that directory to identify who they will work with. And if there are multiple agencies in a county, we encourage the hospital to think about doing it on a rotation basis.
Okay. And that's it's very subjective, yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Connie.
To the hospitals, that's very subjective because you want to spread it among the agencies, but they really, at least in my experience, and down here in Florida, is they go with who they have the relationships with and they trust. And so I definitely have seen, I don't know if that happens up there, but that definitely happens here.
I'm reasonably confident that happens here. because the agencies who are interested in placing a surrendered newborn, they do a lot of outreach with their local hospitals to let them know they're available, and those that are most active, you know, make sure that they have the 24-hour coverage because you know, things happen after hours and work hours and as well on weekends. So you're absolutely right that the agencies that the hospitals generally work with the best are the ones who are probably contacted.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Adoption Associates has had a very successful time with the Safe Delivery Program. And I've talked to families personally that have adopted from AAI and have received a child through the Safe Delivery Program. And it is a wonderful way to save. I believe you're saving children who would be abandoned. And may not make it in that first 72 hours, depending on the situation. And it also takes away a lot of the, I think that the technical pieces that might go to that. And now, previously to this law, were children then put into foster care when this happened?
Yes, they were. Children's Protective Services would be, involved and conduct an investigation, and that would be part of the process, placing the child in foster care. Exactly. And
so
with safe delivery,
yeah, go ahead.
We drafted the legislation knowing that we wanted these infants to be placed as quickly as possible with an adoptive family. And so I would say, unless there's any medical complications, most infants are placed in less than 24 hours after the surrender.
That's wonderful. Because we know that children in foster care, the time that it takes to even get through that termination, in Florida, we're pretty proactive, but, I mean, ours can start at 6 months. So you're looking at a time where if the foster family is not an adoptive family, you know, you have a lot of trauma there through movements, and really this just ensures the child is given straight to the adoptive family with not as many, I think, complications that would come with having a child go into foster care. And our foster care system is very full at this time, so it makes it you know, difficult.
Oh, you're absolutely right, yeah.
You know, and of course, the taxpayers are saving money by having this statute enacted also, too.
Correct. Yeah, because they go with the family right away, so there is no funding that is required.
I absolutely think it was a fabulous concept, and the fact that Michigan has had it really since 2001 goes to say, you know, how... just how much it's needed. How many children in that time, I saw some numbers, but I wanted to hear from you, how many children during that time have been surrendered?
We've had a total of 158, and that is a number as of really July 31st. So I collect the data every quarter, so there may be some additional ones in this final quarter of the state's fiscal year.
Okay. And then for most of these, it looks like they were surrendered at a hospital. So that
right.
is exciting.
Right.
You know,
we had 153 of the 158 have been at a hospital. And majority of that 153 are women who have gone in and delivered and surrendered versus bringing the infant to the hospital.
Okay, or keeping it in secret, having that child at home, then taking the child in. And then you've had a few at fire departments and police stations, but not nearly
right.
as many as hospital. So that's just
no,
so exciting.
We did develop early on when, back in 2005, we worked with a graphic designer to get a logo and a tagline, and we do have signage that we distribute for free to our emergency service providers so that they can either have a static cling sign in a window or an aluminum sign on the exterior of their building designating them as a safe delivery site. And we're working with our 911 responders to do some additional training with them. And at this point, we have not had any parent call 911 to surrender. But I'm thinking that as we do more promotion of that, we may see that happen a little bit more. But we really do push in any of our training with community partners that they stress the importance of the mom's health, and if she has had no prenatal care, at least if she goes in and delivers, then any complications she might encounter will be dealt with.
Absolutely. Now, in the time that this was in place, I don't know a number, but have there still been children that have, passed away because they were abandoned somewhere that wasn't a safe delivery location?
Sadly, I have to say yes. We have no singular way of tracking the numbers. However, most of the incidences where an infant has either been abandoned or murdered by the parent, it does hit the media, and I do try to track at least through the media when these tragic events happen in the hopes of trying to figure out how do we educate the public about the safe delivery law? And I know that a parent who is in that state of denial or panic and desperation, they might not be cognizant of thinking, oh, there's a law, and I'll give birth, and that'll be the end of it. But through our education efforts that we keep promoting, we're feeling that the more people who actually know about the law and at least know the basics of the procedures to follow, they usually, you know, are good individual friends or family members who might suspect the individual is pregnant. And even mm-hmm. though they're maybe denying it, they can maybe offer that information to the person in a, you know, a kind and soft way of saying, you know, just in case, you
right.
know, you have this option, you know. So we keep trying to figure out a variety of ways that we can continue to educate the people of the state of Michigan about this available choice. And it's challenging, Connie.
I can imagine. What are some of your outreach, you know, so that we can tell as people who are tuned in live now but are also going to, as we push this radio interview out, who can go back and listen to it later, what can, you know, what are your outreach methods right now?
Well, in addition to our handbooks and toolkits that we have for our emergency service providers, for the public, we have free resources, and we have posters, we have wallet cards, we have videos. We have a safe delivery website through the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. We do, the consultants who work with us part-time do exhibits at local conferences or any statewide conferences. We have an educational outreach person who is making contact with middle schools, high schools, colleges, and universities, and introducing the educator toolkit that can be used in health class. And it is in Michigan. I'll just digress for a moment. The safe delivery mm-hmm. law is a part of Michigan's model program, so it is required to be introduced in schools.
That is amazing and wonderful. I think that the fact that that's being shared has to make a difference.
Right, and the toolkit makes it really easy for our health teachers have been very proactive in sharing information with their students about safe delivery, and we've, you know, given them games and situation cards and so forth that they can just try out in a classroom, and they don't have to make it last a long time, but we did get some feedback from one of the educators that the students thought we actually had real stories included in the toolkit
right.
that mm-hmm. we extracted from the media, and the teacher reported back to us, and she said the students all went, oh, that wouldn't happen. So they had thought we made it up. So they were shocked to learn that this does happen, and that they need to know about the options available in this situation. And teachers are, you know, it's not only introducing safe delivery, but it's also talking about traditional adoption is the best choice, and if not, then safe delivery is another option. But the free resources, anybody can go to the website, which is at michigan.gov/safe-delivery, and see all of the resources that are available. There are order forms there that they can request any of our pamphlets to distribute in the community, and we have the safe delivery consultants can be reached. We have a hotline, which is 866-733-7733. So there are all ways for our community partners and or individuals to help us spread the word. any of those resources that they would call, we will get information to them and work with them on just making sure that the message is the same and consistent. But this really takes, you know, a huge number of people within the state to promote awareness. It can't be just, you know, a few part-time employees.
No, you really need, you almost need ambassadors who will step
yes.
in. So if I was in your community and say I was looking for something to volunteer, I could contact you and become a safe delivery trainer, become someone who wanted to really get this word out, became passionate about it. You would be open to that.
Absolutely. We'll do any kind of training, go anywhere in the state to do that. And one other resource that I'm currently working on and just about finished with is a community outreach and advocacy toolkit, which individuals and or community partners could use as a reference of what to do and how to do it and where to get the resources that are available to them. So I think that final toolkit, at least I think it's the final toolkit, will be a good way, and I'm pretty sure we're not going to, you know, have printed copies of that, but we'll put it on the website so, it could, you know, sections could be downloaded. So I'm kind of excited about that because I'm hoping to recruit more people. You know, I want to touch base with, you know, sororities and fraternities and service organizations and domestic violence shelters and pregnancy counseling centers, and all of those groups can help us, the faith-based community, school projects.
Yeah.
I mean, they could go out and in local areas and they could check with their local fire departments and police stations to say, do you have your free resource materials if you were going to accept a surrendered newborn? Or I think the face of safe delivery oftentimes will be better met with maybe younger spokespersons who would communicate more directly with young teens and young adults. Because what we do find, interestingly enough, I think when we first worked on the legislation, we were all thinking this was all going to be teenagers.
Yeah.
But the average age has stayed relatively stable throughout all these years at around 25 or 26.
Okay.
So in Michigan, I think our ages were from 15 to 42 surrendering.
Okay. That's really, I mean, and I think it's safe to say people have misperceptions about birth mothers and adoption. They think they're going to be a young high school girl or a young college girl. And what we've learned, of course, for those of us who have been around in adoption for so many years, in domestic adoption is that you really have all different types of scenarios, but it could be a mom that has already had her children, or it could be a couple. The people that are making this choice for adoption as birth parents, this truly unselfish choices, you really can't put it down to what, I mean, it's like people have images of what that looks like, and it truly
right.
isn't that. Have you done any type of a kind of like a media blitz through like billboards, buses? Is there like if I came to Michigan, would I see these, would I be able to like see this in certain areas? Have you targeted any of that?
We haven't done like billboards. It's a very costly endeavor, and we have extremely limited budget, really limited budget. And so I think what we focused on is awareness through our signage. But recently, we tried again over the years. We've tried a number of different media events, and usually that has always been in the month of April, which is Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Right.
And this year we had the governor proclaim Safe Delivery of Newborns Day on April 20th. And what we focused on was, again, trying to target more of that younger population that is into the social media.
Yeah.
So we have, as part of our community outreach and advocacy toolkit, we had a communications section And I worked with the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services to perfect that communication effort in terms of various postings that could be on social media. And that's currently on the website. But that's what we did on April 20th. We worked with our community partners around the state and any agencies that were willing to work with us to do kind of a social media blast and just create that awareness.
Do you have a Facebook page for this?
We work with, again, the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services on a Facebook, and we do have a YouTube. So we're trying to right now currently think about ways to keep that updated, because as you know, is you need to have some current information or something that's useful that can be shared. So we're trying to think about what it is we want that kind of social media to do for us. So it's a little in transition at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one of the things that I've learned, like yourself over the years with social media, is that it is so, so, so powerful when it comes to reaching out and telling stories, staying in the moment. I find like things that are happening, children are tuning in. They're tuning into Vimeo. That's those little short little... they're little videos, very like 3-second videos. And to reach out to kind of, you know, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, and letting people know that this exists, it's almost like it has to become, you know, a buzzword for people to know, oh yeah, I know what that is. I know what that is.
Right. Right.
And then they keep talking. Do you ever, like you said, you had young people, do you ever have like clients that have gone through this, but were willing to stay public and do any type of stories?
Families have generally been a little bit reluctant to do that.
I would imagine it's so, almost impossible, but just asking.
Yeah. Not that we haven't asked a couple of people, and we've had a few people who have participated in some of our past efforts at awareness. You know, we've talked about identifying an individual who was identified and charged with abandonment and or open murder, and wondering, gee, should we try to interview that person to see, you know, what we could have done differently?
That's fascinating. I mean, as a listener, as somebody who, I mean, I would want to know. If you had this option, would you have taken it?
Right. It's a tough situation. Oprah Winfrey several years ago did do an interview with a teenager who had been charged with murder. Actually, it was like 2 or 3 years after the infant was born. They were able to identify the parent, and I think in hindsight we all say, yeah, we would have done things differently, but when you're in that moment of panic and what do I do and I don't want anybody to know, I'm not sure you're always thinking clearly.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but it would still be interesting to talk to someone who, you know, maybe I would even become a spokesperson saying, this is what happened to me.
That would be an absolute, to be able to find somebody to share. I mean, I believe that storytelling is how people listen the most. And all you
have
to do is social media to do that. And it could be someone who blacks out their face and holds up white cards and tells their story. But I think it's very powerful. I think another thing that's very powerful are families who have adopted. I was truly touched by the family who had, been blessed to receive a child through this program, because they had been as a family through two major disappointments in their adoption journey. And as a family that had infertility issues, you know, 4 years, and they held the faith the whole time. They're an amazing family. They never gave up, but they believed that their child was out there. And so when the child came to, you know, the agency, they were top on the list for, you know, for a child. And so that was really exciting.
Sure, sure. Well, and we do have a testimonial as part of our video package of a parent who had a surrendered newborn placed with her. And they had, I think, the same thing, the fertility issues. And a student that we had working with us for a while, it was her pastor, had adopted a surrendered newborn. So now that we, you know, the law has been in effect for, 13, 14 years,
mm-hmm.
You know, more and more, I run into people who know somebody who adopted. So it's, you know, it's very touching to know, you know, to hear, oh, it's been a success. And we have not had any, you know, problems identified that I'm aware of that any of the agencies have encountered. So I'm just really just thrilled to know that families have, you know, were there and are raising their children and loving their children, and these children have a future.
Absolutely, because, you know, I don't think that we'll ever have a shortage of families who want to step up and care for children and commit and love children. I think, and I believe this from domestic, international, all the way through child welfare, dependency, adoptions from foster care, it's our job in certain instances to make the connection and to make
right.
it happen. And it's, you know, in certain areas it's more difficult, but truly what the safe delivery program has done is given a way to cut through the time, the weight, the trauma, the red tape, and really give a child a great opportunity to move forward quickly. And to give the birth parent the chance to not be punitively punished.
Right.
You know, and that is just what's so exciting. So is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, just encourage listeners to become our community advocates if they can, and take advantage of the free resources that are available to do that in the communities. And as I said, we are happy to work with any group or individual, and we'll travel to where they are to help and do as much as we can to keep that public awareness out there, because it needs to be not just today, but tomorrow and the next day. It's an ongoing process, and we need spokespeople out there who are passionate and willing to reach out to their community leaders and organizations and church groups and schools and carry the positive word that this is an option when traditional adoption is not.
I think it's amazing. Is there a way that, I mean, they can just Google, you know, Michigan Safe Delivery Program. They can go to the state website. Is there a phone number that you have, a hotline?
We do have the hotline, and that is, the number is 866-733-7733.
Okay, terrific. For those of you who are listening, that is the number you can reach out to. I want to thank you, Jean, for being here. I want to thank Adoption Associates for sponsoring this amazing adoption blog talk. It's called Adoption Focus. My name is Connie Going. I'm privileged to be a consultant with Adoption Associates and to spread the message and to educate about adoption. And they can be reached at 1-800-677-2367. Or www.adoptionassociates.net. And Jean, just thank you again for your time today, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks so much, Connie. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.